Today on Maine Calling, Motherhood and Nature, an author's reflections. For many, becoming a mother for the first time changes our perspective, prompts us to think more deeply about big questions. Author Chelsea Steinauer Scudder came to motherhood with degrees in divinity and years of investigating spirituality in the natural world. But her daughter's birth brought forth a new dimension to her journey, research and contemplation about non-human mothers, animals, microscopic organisms, and plants. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, as we head into Mother's Day weekend, we talk with Steinauer Scudder about what she discovered and her reflections. She's gathered them in a new book, Mother, Creature, Kin, What We Learn from Nature's Mothers in a Time of Unraveling. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org. And by Verrill, committed to delivering trusted legal services in Maine and throughout the Northeast for 163 years. Learn more at verrill-law.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. What does it mean to mother for humans and for other creatures in the natural world? Author Chelsea Steinauer Scudder has been thinking deeply about that question, and her new book explores it. The book is called Mother, Creature, Kin, What We Learn from Nature's Mothers in a Time of Unraveling. She is a writer and editor who currently lives in Vermont, but lived here in Maine while writing a large part of this book. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you think nature teaches us about being a mother? Did you think differently about nature when you became one? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on social media, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And a reminder, our Maine Calling phone number is indeed different than the one for Maine Public's membership drive. Our Maine Calling phone number, as always, 1-800-399-3566. Chelsea, thank you so much for joining us for this hour. I'm thinking as I read your book that you are a person who is comfortable thinking about profound questions. You have a master's from Harvard Divinity School as a writer and editor at Emergence Magazine. You interviewed really big thinkers, but it seems to me that nothing for you was quite like becoming pregnant and thinking about what it would mean to become a mother. How do you think that changed you?
Oh, thank you. And thank you so much for having me. I'm really just thrilled to be here. So great question. Yes. So the sort of three threads that have run through my life, all of which have appeared at different moments in time, have been ecology, spirituality, and most recently, motherhood. And so I came into motherhood with first this sort of ecological orientation. My father is a botanist and a prairie ecologist, and my mother, I grew up with her having a native plant landscaping business. And so I had a very sort of plant forward childhood. And then my path through college and graduate school was in comparative religion and thinking about how religion and spirituality inform people's relationships to each other and to the world and with those big unanswerable questions. And I sort of finally put those two threads together myself as a young adult. Thinking about how the living world and our beloved places can be sites where we encounter the sacred and a sense of mystery and awe and wonder, and of course also sites of our damaged relationship to the earth and all the ways we are entangled in that as well. And so I then became pregnant, coming into my second trimester. We were living in South Portland, was right when Maine went into COVID lockdown. And so the first words of this book really appeared when all of our worlds had sort of shrunk down to what was right around us and started to clarify for me with that up close view and this sort of unsettling time coming into focus, what it means to bring a child into the world and what it means to be a mother in an uncertain, shifting landscape. And so part of the way I started to answer that question as I was going through my pregnancy and then in the early months and early years of raising my daughter was starting to look more closely at the landscapes around us and the plants and the creatures that were inhabiting them and wanting to just go deeper into the extent to which our interconnection to the places around us and to the world around us has something really to say to us about how our well-being is mutually dependent on the well-being of our human communities, but also our more than human communities. And so I wanted to look at motherhood as a way of course, caring for my child and my daughter, but also a way of thinking about that caring for her means caring for others as well. And so looking at mothering as kind of this verb that invites us into the work of giving that care and attention to sort of increasingly wide circles that take into account who we're sharing our lands and our places with. And so that is sort of the practice I've started on and the questions that informed this book.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, using the word as a verb, to mother or mothering. And for you, it is a pretty broad definition. Really, to mother, in my reading, is to care for. And how did you come to that? And why is it mothering? I mean, how come it isn't parenting or loving?
Yes, great question. So one of the inspirations for this book was Robin Wall Kimmerer's Braiding Sweetgrass. And she has a line in one of her chapters about, she says, being a good mother is the work of creating a world where all of life's beings can flourish. And that was sort of one of those world opening sentences for me, and starting to think about, I think, yeah, this idea of, I liked the word mother, probably in a biased way because I was one, but also because bringing in that sense of feminine, I think, opens up a little bit this idea of communal work and shared work and this, you know, inherent sense we have of mothering as this sort of deep orientation of unconditional love and care. And also, but what I wanted to do with that word was think about love and care as something all of us are capable of, whether or not we're mothers, whether or not we identify as female, that this sort of expansive way of doing that work of giving our bodies and our hands and our hearts and our minds to caring and nurturing others is sort of non-gendered work. That is work all of us are capable of, and that is work that is so deeply needed right now. And so mothering became a way for me to not only explore sort of the central identity of myself as a mother to my daughter, but also to think about how can we start to widen that out and use that as a way of being in deeper relationship to the world around us.
Chelsea, I know when I became a mother, I developed a sense of worry I never had before. I'd never been a worrywart. Fear then, of course, of what would happen to my children. And you seem to have also felt that, but then not just felt it, but taken another step by connecting it with the vulnerability and the fragility that's everywhere in the natural world. And I mean, I'm thinking about several places in your book, but specifically about the owl family you write about.
Yes, so absolutely. I had a very similar experience of sort of, I think I thought that I would be a very chill, relaxed parent, but it's your child is sort of your heart just walking around outside in the world, and it feels incredibly vulnerable, and you feel that ineffable, wonderful love, and also that deep fear of your child's being an immortal human being. And so so one of the sections in the book is about a year we had lived out in Washington State, and we shared the property with a family of barn owls who were nesting in a nest box that was attached to the barn. And there was an owl cam in the nest box. So we got to sort of see this family of owls come into being, first with the two parents and then the eggs and then the chicks. And it was a time when I was really, we had just sort of moved to this new place, and I was wrestling with what it means to belong somewhere, what it means to be oriented, what it means to create a home where our children can feel safe and cared for. And these owls were initially this example for me as I was learning about them and how they navigate their world, of just how deeply tuned in to their places so many animals and creatures are. And in the case of the barn owl, it's with this incredible sensory attunement to sound. Their whole bodies are wired to be a vessel to hear sound and to navigate their survival, their finding food, raising their chicks. And so in learning about this female barn owl we would somehow see out hunting, and how she, her satellite dish-shaped face and her the design of her wings, and the fact that she could strike a mouse in complete darkness that was running through tall grass, was sort of, she became this example for me of just what it means to be deeply oriented to a place and to belong to a place through our sensory bodies and through that depth of attention that for her came so naturally, and for me, I was sort of struggling to find. And then that nest of chicks was predated by what they think was another species of owl, a barred owl, and then just the grief, I think, that came with that loss of this family we had been watching and sharing the space with, to see it unravel, also sort of drove home that sense of not having a guarantee of safety for so many in this world, and the pain of that, and also a lesson to not have that be an invitation to turn our attention away, but to actually give our attention and our care all that all the more deeply, to just be aware of who's around us and what shape their world is taking, and how to be sharing space with others.
You became pregnant during the pandemic. You mentioned that living in South Portland at the time of the lockdown. As someone who already was caring deeply about the environment, you were already worried about the impact of climate change. But then on top of that, there was a global pandemic. So you were basically bringing a child into a world filled with uncertainty in a way that was sort of probably not tangible for a very long time in our human history. How did observing nature, how did that close attention help you deal with that uncertainty?
I think it was such a lesson for me, even as someone who had sort of from my earliest memories been sort of oriented to paying attention to our world. The pandemic was a real lesson for me in all of the ways that I still, that was going to be an ongoing practice for me, for it probably still will be for the rest of my life. But I think just having that, I was pregnant, I was needing to just be outside and walk, and as so many of us did, I would just walk the exact same loop or path over and over and over. And there was one particular place we loved to go, which was Dawes Woods in South Portland. And it was just quiet, and it was beautiful and still. And they have a beautiful pond there. And so there was a number of weeks where I would go sit across the pond from this Canada goose who had just started a nest and was raising her own brood of eggs. And it was this one of the first moments for me in a long time that I had just taken the time to sit and to notice another creature. And I felt this affinity with her, that we were both sort of doing this work of keeping our unborn children warm and safe and held close. And so I just had this wonderful few weeks of sitting with this mother goose and watching her. And that was a lesson for me too. And just thinking about, I remember this moment of just being surprised at how, she just had to stay on that nest, and the world around her was also very small and very narrow in that time of sitting on her eggs. And so it was a reflection for me of just being deeply present where we are, and in that time of sort of needing to just be narrow and have a small world. It was just a reminder that that's actually available to us all the time, even as we've come out of the pandemic, of course, just trying to keep that in mind, that there's so much to see and to be aware of right where we are, and right where we can just reach out and touch so much of the beautiful earth around us. And so that was, yeah, I think that was a major lesson that came out of the pandemic for me.
Yeah, there's a whole world in our backyard and in our communities. We're speaking with Chelsea Steinauer Scudder. Her new book is Mother, Creature, Kin: what we learn from nature's mothers in a time of unraveling. As Chelsea speaks, is what she's saying something that resonates with you? Did becoming a mother or becoming a parent change your relationship with the natural world? Or what did you notice in the natural world that you'd like to share? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hello, everyone. I am Corey Morrissey. I am Maine Public's Marketing Director, and I am here with...
Lucy Santerre. Hi, everyone. I do social media at Maine Public, and we're just taking a few minutes out of your day, out of this awesome episode of Maine Calling, to talk to you about our spring fundraiser and all of the great opportunities you have to make a donation to Maine Public and to make an impact with your gift.
Absolutely. 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call. Again, 1-800-866-1475. And Lucy and I do a lot of our promotion, and our wonderful volunteers here are ready to take your call. It is New Friend Friday, which you and I do a lot of the promotion. I kind of like that.
Yeah, New Friend Friday, it rolls off the tongue, and everyone loves a Friday. I'm personally so happy that it's Friday. I'm looking forward to the beautiful weather this weekend.
Right?
And I'm going to feel great knowing that I support Maine Public. That's something that you can do as well when you call 1-800-866-1475, or you can visit us online at mainepublic.org/donate. You know, any amount makes a huge difference, and this is really special.
Yep.
Right now, first-time donors... First-time donations are being matched by Tim and June of Lewiston. So thanks to these generous donors in Lewiston,
absolutely,
anybody who makes a first-time donation today, that amount is going to be doubled. How awesome is that?
It's great. And we're not very prescriptive about what you donate. Whatever you feel comfortable with, whatever works for your budget, and any amount will be donated, again, by Tim and June of Lewiston. Incredibly generous. 1-800-866-1475. Now, we do mention that number because we're also on Maine Calling, right? Which is rare for us, you and I, to be on Maine Calling, which is kind of fun. But that is, this number is very different than the Maine Calling number. This is the number to support the work that Maine Calling does. 1-800-866-1475. We have a bank of volunteers here. They're really excited to take your calls. It's been a really fun morning. This is the time to jump in.
That's right. 1-800-866-1475, or visit us at mainepublic.org/donate. And like Corey said, Maine Calling is one of our special programs. It's really awesome because people call in from all over the state.
Yeah.
You get to hear yourself on the radio. That's such a fun opportunity. And every episode is so unique. We're loving listening to this episode right now. Like I said, it's getting me excited to spend time in nature, maybe spend some time in nature with my little nieces and nephews.
Ooh, that's fun.
Yeah, it's just a good time getting a little muddy and, you know, reconnecting. And so, you know, when you're out there maybe doing spring cleaning, maybe you're going to be listening to Maine Public Radio, and just think about how impactful that is in your life and put a value on that service. When you call 1-800-866-1475, you can tell one of our lovely volunteers how much you'd like to contribute, and remember, that amount will be doubled today.
Absolutely. Just, and it's New Friend Friday, and that is a great point, Lucy. We love hearing when you're donating. Give us a buzz. Tell, when you're talking to us, tell us why you support Maine Public. What are some of your favorite shows? Why are you calling us today? Again, 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call. As we talk about it, if you are a new possible donor, just be aware that 75% of our funding does come from listeners just like you. People are always a little bit surprised by that, but that is what nonprofit radio is. It's community supported. It's supported one call at a time. Give us a call today, 1-800-866-1475. And if you have called during this drive, thank you. If not, we're ready to take your call.
Thank you so much.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. My guest today, New England-based author Chelsea Steinauer Scudder. Her new book, Mother, Creature, Kin. It explores the meaning of motherhood and connects the natural world to the spirit of caring for one another. Do you have a definition of motherhood you'd like to share? Do you think about motherhood in terms of spirituality or the natural world? Join our conversation. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. We're going to take a call now from Joan, who's a traveling nurse. Hi, Joan. How are you? And go ahead.
Hi, Jen. I was listening to your show, and I had to throw in my two cents worth. The involvement of motherhood I've seen amongst women, trans men or women, gay men, people that are adopting parents, drug addicts. It doesn't matter who you are or what your societal place is in the world. Motherhood evolves, and it starts when I see them in labor and delivery. I've worked all over the United States, and it's an incredible gift that I'm able to witness this. And women, I'm using women just as a general, their maternal instinct just kicks in overdrive when the baby is born. And the thing is, when I'm with them and they don't have a child and they're still in utero, they're in labor, these women and people don't know what they don't know until they have that child. So it's an incredible source of strength and love, and I words don't even grasp onto it. And it's really incredible. I see it in nature, and I overheard what she was saying when she talked. She sees animals. My whole life is different because of my job, and I witness animals, and I just everything has a life, even a worm, and I think about that all the time. It's just a natural instinct for all to protect their little child. And I mentioned drug addicts as well. When they have these little precious babies, they love their babies no matter what. I've been in situations where there have been dead babies born, and your maternal instinct is they're incredible how they act. It's sad, but it happens, and that's what happens. So I just wanted to add to that because I love the story that she's written a book about it. It's really incredible the strength that we have as women and anybody that becomes a parent. So anyway,
Joan, thank you for calling. And as a labor and delivery nurse, do you have any idea of how many births you've been present for?
Well, probably 30 years worth. So that's been a lot. And I've been all over the United States in a lot of different cities. And
Chelsea,
I treasure my job. I'm very lucky to have the job I have.
Chelsea, thoughts on Joan's lovely comments?
Thank you so much, Joan. And goodness, thank you for that work you do. That is, I think often of my own experience at MaineMed and how invaluable the labor and delivery nurses were to helping me make that transition from a pregnant woman into a mother. And I so appreciate what you say, absolutely. Whether we're birthing people or have children in our lives in other ways that we are giving care to, there is just that instinct of deep love, of the need for protection, of that, as you say, that sort of beyond words feeling of love and care that kind of blooms in us as we have the opening to provide that care for someone else. And I think that is one of the greatest gifts we have as people is that potential for that deep care that we can give. And what you were saying too just was reminding me of both one of my experiences while writing the book of seeing a mother right whale and her newly born calf and feeling that same thing you're talking about of seeing just how protective and how closely in the orbit of her calf she stayed. And then also speaking to one of the scientists who's working with those endangered whales, who he sort of in this position of dealing with working with a critically endangered species and all of the sort of pain and grief and uncertainty that goes with that. And one of the things he does in his spare time is volunteer as a hospice worker in a hospital. And so I think just this sense that when we have our hearts open, even when we're facing difficulty, that care sort of comes through all the more deeply. So yeah, thank you, Joan. Thank you. Thank you for your comments and for your work.
Thank you for calling in, Joan. The phone number to call in, 1-800-399-3566. My producer tells me that this is a very special call. Hello out there. Who's calling? Can you hear me?
Allison.
Oh, can Can you say your name again?
So much. Happy Mother's Day.
That's Aspen. That's Chelsea's daughter saying Happy Mother's Day. I'm sorry I talked at the same time as you, Chelsea. Chelsea, what are you doing right now?
Playing with Play-Doh.
Playing with Play-Doh. So, Chelsea, when you wrote this book, beautiful Aspen was, of course, just born and a new baby and now 4.5 years old. Yeah. And so, you know, do you have to write another one? Have you come to more realizations in the last 4.5 years?
Oh, wonderful question. And hello, Aspen. Thank you so much for calling me, sweetie. Yes, what a good question. I think one of the gifts of this book was, you know, I set out to write it thinking I might answer some questions that I had about the living world and becoming a mother. And of course, I didn't really answer any of them. I explored them and I wrestled with them, but I really, which is a beautiful experience in its own way. But I think I've really come out with questions that will continue to grow and root and branch for me. And so, and especially Aspen's been one of my greatest teachers about, of course, what it means to be a mother and just what it means to have this incredibly natural affinity that children have for being in the living world and in a very unmediated, open, curious, even conversational way. And so, yeah, coming, you know, I finished writing the book when she was about 3. And so, yes, already as she's come to have her own relationship with the places we've lived, as she's come to have the language to start speaking to us about that and communicating that with us, I think, yes, whether or not there's another book, I'm not sure, but certainly just as we continue to, as a family, come into deeper relationship with the places we live, that that has just been joyful work in so many ways.
Aspen, before I say goodbye, is there anything else you'd like to say? I think we may have lost her to the Play-Doh, Chelsea.
That's okay.
Thanks for calling in, sure. Aspen. Let's see. We'll go to Joyce, who's calling from Vermont. Hi, Joyce. Go ahead.
I'm a naturopathic physician with an expertise in environmental medicine, and I'm a mom of three children. And my awareness of that fetal life and infancy in humans and is a window of vulnerability, whether it's caterpillars turning into butterflies, whether it's tadpoles turning into frogs. I'm really concerned about the poisoning of this window of vulnerability of our young. Rachel Carson's work from back in 1962 about the breaking of the eggshells and the massive increase in endocrine hormone disrupting chemicals in this very vulnerable stage. And also as a La Leche League leader for 17 years helping women in Western Massachusetts to breastfeed their babies, I'm very concerned about the tremendous decrease in women choosing to exclusively breastfeed their babies, the original nutrition. It's a type of poisoning that affects children for the rest of their lives. And as one man told me, oh, breastfeeding is just a fad that comes and goes. No, no, no. The World Health Organization said babies are born to be breastfed. So there's
Joyce,
a number of issues
Joyce,
here.
Joyce, thank you for calling. I want to go back to what she said at the beginning, Chelsea, about her concerns about the poisoning of the natural world. And she mentions Rachel Carson. Rachel Carson was also very influential to you.
Yes, thank you, Joyce. Absolutely. So Rachel Carson, of course, Silent Spring speaks of that porousness, that vulnerability that we have and that other creatures have to the poisoning of our environment and all the ways that those things move in and out and through our bodies. And Rachel Carson's work, she to me is sort of an exemplary example of this idea of sort of an ecological motherhood. She didn't have biological children. She late in life adopted her grandnephew, but had this orientation to such deep attention, such deep care. This, of course, rigorous work that helped her to understand just all of the ways in which our human bodies are interacting with our environment and raising the alarm about that. And so, yes, you know, however we choose to nurture and nourish our children, we are porous creatures, and we are facing the consequences of past and ongoing pollution, of course. And so thank you for your work as someone who sees all the ways that the environment intersects our bodies. And I think that was a real learning for me in this book too, is that we were porous in the sense of encountering wildness and encountering wonder and joy, and we're also porous in the sense of encountering all the ways that we've become sort of entangled with some of the harm that's been done to the living world. And so absolutely, and yes, please read Rachel Carson's work, because she just gives such a not only a rigorous look at that, but also one that's really full of deep care and a deep love for not only the living world, but also for people. And so that's such an important point to raise. Yeah, thank you.
And also a woman with a very deep connection to Maine.
Yes. Yes. And I had one of my favorite parts of writing this book was that Aspen and my husband Andy and I got to go spend a weekend at her summer cottage on Southport Island and see some of those tide pools that she was looking at and researching as she was writing her sea trilogy and her beautiful book, The Edge of the Sea. And that was such a gift to get to be in a space that she had inhabited once and to see just a little glimpse of her life a little more closely.
Joyce, thanks for your call. Well, speaking of how creatures and speaking of Rachel Carson, speaking of the edge of the sea, you've talked about right whales. We've talked about birds. We've talked about geese and owls. But you, Chelsea, even believe that invertebrates have lessons to teach us about mothering.
Yes. So one of the creatures that I was not intending I didn't even know about before I started writing the book, but I was interviewing a salt marsh biologist at the University of Maine, and he mentioned to me, just sort of in passing, this single-celled organism that lives in all marine environments, but also lives in this sort of intertidal zone of salt marshes called foraminifera, or forams for short. And I became so curious about them and learned that they are, yeah, these single-celled organisms that are sort of, you know, just the most basic form of life, so incredibly tiny, but their work has actually an incredibly large, important scale to it. So they build these shells around themselves, and when they die, their shells become part of this really sort of ocean-wide fossil record. And that record has shown us through all the thousands of species of forams that not only have forams survived numerous mass extinction events over the last 500 plus million years, but have, because of how narrow the ranges are of each of those species, they've told us sort of where the oceans have been over that span of time as well, and also sort of give us hints and clues as to where the seas might be heading and sort of what might be coming in terms of sea level rise. And so that was, I think, really looking at life on that small of a scale and seeing kind of the impact of even a single tiny shell that might be as small as a strawberry seed still has this role to play in telling this bigger story of this moment that life lived in. And so I think for me, even just as a mother for sure, but also as a storyteller, just thinking about how each of us, wherever we are and in whatever moment of time and transformation we might be living in and through, that we have important work to do, even if it can feel very small and very narrow, that that we don't always know sort of the ways that we are actually also participating in a much bigger story.
We're speaking with author Chelsea Steinauer-Scudder. Her new book, Mother, Creature, Kin. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd love to hear your thoughts. The phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back.
Hi, everyone. Happy Friday. My name is Lucy Santerre. I do the social media here at Maine Public, and I'm standing next to Corey Morrissey, who happens to be my boss and also the marketing director here at Maine Public. How are you, Corey?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Great. You know, I'm loving this Maine Calling conversation. I think it's so beautiful and poignant, and it reminds me of one of these testimonial quotes that we recently received from a donor.
Ooh, let's see.
We cannot simply rely on others to support services that we cherish. You are the someone else. Now, that was Mary Beth from Berwick, and she makes an amazing point. All of us are listening to Maine Public Radio. We're listening to Maine Calling right now. And it's a reminder, don't underestimate the impact that you can have when you donate. So give us a call today at 1-800-866-1475 or visit us on Maine Public's website at mainepublic.org/donate and make an impact with your gift today. We're headed into the weekend. It's a beautiful time to spend time outside. Know that you are making this service possible when you contribute any amount.
Absolutely. And this is also New Friend Friday, which is a great term. First-time donations are being matched by Tim and June of Lewiston. What a great opportunity to basically double your money in your support of Maine Public. It is, you know, think about new friends, Maine Public. As you know, Lucy, we've just expanded our signal. So there are some friends out there now who will be new from Frenchville, Millinocket, Greenville, Bethel, Eastport, Monson, all these different areas. If this is the first time that you may be tuning into Maine Calling, your support is needed to keep these types of programs going strong on Maine Public Radio. 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call. And again, it is New Friend Friday. This is a rare opportunity to have your donation, to have your impact doubled.
That's right. You know, we would love to be your friend. It's so exciting when new people become members, become evergreen friends, donating on a monthly basis. We love to have you as our, you know, Maine Public supporters. And to everyone who's listening in, if you've been listening for some time, today is the time to take that next step and contribute to this service that you know and love. Remember, first-time donations are being matched by Tim and June of Lewiston.
Absolutely.
That means if you're giving $5, that's going to be $10 to support Maine Public Radio. If you're giving $50, that's going to turn into $100 a month supporting Maine Public Radio. So don't wait. Give us a call now at 1-800-866-1475.
And Lucy, you mentioned a great thing to become an evergreen friend. An evergreen friend is a really easy way. It's a monthly. You set it up by month. You're ready to go. And the wonderful thing about Evergreen Friends is it gets you access to something called Maine PBS Passport.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't, that's the knowing, oh, yeah, because it's a wonderful streaming service of Masterpiece programs, Nova, Nature, Ken Burns specials. It's all available to you when you become an Evergreen Friend of Maine Public. And that starts by calling us at 1-800-866-1475. We have a huge bank of volunteers here ready to take your call. Again, 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call.
Thanks so much.
And thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Of course, Sunday is Mother's Day, and our topic today is motherhood, but a very specific take on it. I'm talking with author Chelsea Steinauer-Scudder, whose new book is titled Mother, Creature, Kin: What We Learn from Nature's Mothers in a Time of Unraveling. Have you been listening and connecting with some of what we've said? Do you have your own thoughts on the role of nature in our own humanity? Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Again, the number one number for Maine Calling is 1-800-399-3566. Chelsea, we have a long email here from Carrie, so I'm going to sort of be editing as I read, but she writes, "It's wonderful to hear a young mom learn these lessons through motherhood. It's nice to know this is a timeless feeling. I've been a mom for 30 years and had many profound moments. Where you raised your baby in the pandemic, for me it was 9/11. And I remember being glued to the TV and hearing a banging on my back porch to find my crying kindergarten. With everything going on, I had forgotten to get him off the bus. He said to me, 'Mommy, what was so important you couldn't get me off the bus?' And I was hit with the realization that I needed to explain this horrible world to a five-year-old. And she also says that Braiding Sweetgrass is one of her all-time favorite books. And she uses this quote from it: "The young and the old are linked in one long breath, an inhalation that calls for reciprocal exhalation, nourishing the common root from which they both arose. New leaf to old, old to new, mother to daughter, mutuality endures. I am consoled by the lesson of the lilies." So, Carrie, thank you so much for this. And, you know, what's so interesting to me about what Carrie says about the moment on September 11th is that the work doesn't end when something distracts you, but it is very human for something to distract you.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you so much, Carrie. I can relate to moments of hearing difficult news. It seems like we're bombarded with that often, and, you know, feeling sort of that sensation of shrinking into oneself, of needing to process that. And then, but of course, our children are right there, and they're needing our attention and our engagement. And I think there are, there have certainly been lessons in that for me, just in terms of a reminder. It's been a painful and a helpful reminder that, you know, as our children, of course, are going to grow into worlds where there's going to be difficulty, there's going to be loss, there's going to be plenty of hard things, some of which we might be able to have an idea about, some of which we won't be able to anticipate or expect. That just having them that close, I think for me and my daughter, has been just a tangible form of giving that love and care, of thinking about how can I raise a child who knows what it means to be resilient, who knows what it means to be adaptive, who can, you know, come into these hard things and be able to weather some of that. And I think those are really challenging questions. I don't, you know, those aren't places where I have solid answers either. But even thinking, as you know, if time is not far away when we will start talking to our daughter about things like climate change and things like, you know, so many of the challenges our world is facing, and figuring out how to do that with love and care, how to also, I think a big question for us is how to raise her to be someone who deeply listens, who makes space for others, who is participating in that work of healing and mending where she can. And so I so appreciate that.
I'm so glad you use the words resilience and adaptation, because Chelsea, I was thinking to myself that maybe we had been talking about vulnerability and frailty, but that's not the whole story when it comes to nature.
Absolutely. Yes. I think especially being in Maine's salt marshes, where I spent a good amount of time writing this book down at the Rachel Carson National Wildlife Refuge in Wells and in Scarborough Marsh, and thinking about salt marshes as these incredible landscapes that are in this, I was curious about them because they're in this moment of, or they live in a constant shift from high tide to low tide, from this just sort of this liminal place where change and transition is their way of life, is their way of being what they are, which is incredibly biodiverse, incredibly productive ecosystems. And so I loved this kind of sense of biomimicry and thinking what landscapes can teach us about what it means to weather change. And as our sea levels are rising, you know, salt marshes in Maine, of course, are facing challenges with keeping up with that, but they also have a lot of built-in ability to migrate, to continue to accrete sediment and build themselves up. And so it was also a really hopeful lesson for me to see this transitional landscape that is built on shift and change, but is also able to weather that and to find ways of navigating that. And so I think it's so important to to remember that we are resilient and adaptable, and so are our places, and that in, you know, as we come into deeper understanding of that, there are ways we can have that be reciprocal, that we can work with each other, with our places, with our communities to deepen that ability to be resilient.
Chelsea, we've mentioned animals, now we've mentioned invertebrates, but we haven't mentioned plants, and they're part of your book as well. So why don't I have my last question about the book be about the concept of the mother tree and what the mother tree can teach us humans here on Mother's Day weekend.
Yes, so that part of my book was strongly informed by Suzanne Simard's work and her book, which is called The Mother Tree. I highly recommend. And she writes about in her book how forests have, I'm sure many of us have heard now of these mycelial networks in the forest floor that connect trees to not only their own sort of fellow species of trees, but also to other species in the forest, and sort of form this network that has taught us that forests don't just compete with each other, but they're actually a place of cooperation and of shared, yeah, sort of mutual reciprocal well-being, where they can pass not only nutrients and information to each other, but also genetics and strength that way. And so I was very inspired by Simard's work, and we have some land about an hour and a half north of us in Vermont. We have about 20 acres of forest that's recovering from much of this same history that's in New England of, you know, a few moments of intensive logging, and is now growing back, and just learning about the ways in which trees can also be models for us of not only sort of a shared resilient community, but I was particularly interested in learning about the Eastern hemlock tree and how, you know, they can be centuries old, and the trees that might grow up beneath a parent tree, a 1-inch thick sapling I learned can be a century old. So if you see a tiny hemlock tree, it could be as old as your grandparents, and they do this very, very slow form of growth in order to be strong trees when they get older. That slow growth helps them build trunks that are strong and genetically resilient. And then hemlocks are a foundation species in a forest. So as they grow slowly, as they age in a forest, they are also keeping the other parts of the forest healthy and clean. They're keeping the water clean. They're providing food for animals. And so I think for me, this idea of the mother tree who is helping her or their child to be, to exercise restraint, to practice slowness and patience, to grow as a part of a community with a sense of shared well-being. That was one
and
of
to grow
the
strong. Yeah.
And to
yeah.
grow strong. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Chelsea, thank you so much for your time today. Chelsea Steinauer Scudder, the author of Mother Creature Kin. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. Main Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Our theme song was composed by Mike Jandrow. We'd love for you to subscribe to Main Calling's weekly newsletter. You can go to maincalling.org to do so. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Public Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Maine Public's Spring Drive. This is day three. I'm here with Lucy Suchek. Lucy Santerre. Oh, my gosh. I'm Corey Morrissey. I'm the marketing person. Lucy does our social media. And we are here to talk a little bit about why you're listening right now. You love public radio.
Yeah, that's right, Corey. So right now we just listened to an amazing program, Maine Calling. If you're like me, you love Maine Calling. I was just waiting in my driveway last night to hear some of the end of one of those segments. It's one of our great programs. And if this kind of program is impactful for you, why don't you give us a call today and donate and continue to make this program possible? That number to call is 1-800-866-1475. You can also visit us online at mainepublic.org/donate. donate. Now today is a special day, yep. Not just because it's Friday, though Friday is very special, but it's New Friend Friday. So today, first-time donations are being matched by Tim and June of Lewiston. So what does that mean, a donation being matched?
It's powerful. Everything is doubled. You talked about it very well in the last break, like $5, $6, $20, $50, whatever you're comfortable donating to Maine Public, it's matched, it's doubled. So your 50 becomes 100, your 100 becomes 200. It's a remarkable service that we believe we supply. We know you're listening today, so we know that you value the service, value the types of discussions that Jennifer just had.
That's right. And, you know, we're heading into Here and Now next. We've got lots of news programs on throughout the day. And the thing about Maine Public Radio and all of the news content that we're putting out is that our communities, people like you, need reliable information in order to thrive, go about your day, make decisions. And that's why Maine Public is committed to the facts and providing that local journalism and national news. You count on this service to bring you news without noise and stories that don't sensationalize. And we count on you too. So your donations are what makes everything that we do possible. 75% of Maine Public's budget comes from donors like you. So become a friend today, if not already. And if you're already a friend,
Better friend? I don't know if
maybe
it goes
so.
Next
yeah.
step.
If you give $5, maybe increase that to $7. Or if you give $50, maybe increase it to $75. And remember, if you become a new Evergreen friend for the first time today, our friends Jim and June in Lewiston are doubling that amount.
Absolutely. Now, one of the stories out there, Lucy, that you and I are very involved in, is there is a real threat to public broadcasting. We acknowledge that as a station. We're very aware, and we're monitoring the situation. But to be clear, that's not why we're here today. We're here today to talk about the programs that you love and value and asking you for your support for them. Things like, you know, favorite shows, our educational programming, Maine Calling, you just heard, PBS Kids. This is our spring fundraising drive called Here for Maine. That's what it's all about. Now, if you do want to help with the funding issue, we are encouraging everyone to go to a website called protectmypublicmedia.org. Again, protectmypublicmedia.org. And that is where you can be a great advocate for the station. But again, we're here today really talking about why you love Maine Public and the different ways that we serve the state. 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call, or you can go online to mainepublic.org where you can donate safely and securely.
That's right. And, you know, if you haven't visited mainepublic.org, I'd recommend checking that out. We've got tons of resources, tons of news stories. Everything that you hear from the local Maine Public Radio news team, you can find full articles at mainepublic.org. And while you're browsing, you might explore some of our shows. You might check out, you know, the PBS Passport page. If you're not already a member, that's an amazing resource. It's essentially a streaming service for people who contribute to their local PBS station for as little as $5 a month. And, you know, no broadcast entity does as much for enlightening and enriching our lives as Maine and Maine Public. That is a testimonial from Peter and Barbara of Falmouth. Ooh. You know, we're not just sharing news information and facts, but we're providing hours-long programs that are enriching and educational. You know, we as a public media entity have the ability to dive into these programs in depth, and you make that possible.